We all desire to be happy. We all desire a type of happiness that brings us to a sense of fulfillment, a kind of purpose in life, something that drives us forward and gives our life meaning. This is the kind of happiness we seek. And yet, although we all desire it and we pawn after it, we spend an exceptional amount of time and energy striving after it. We work. We work so we can have a nice vacation where we can rest and enjoy things and come back with all these great memories. We strive so much after it that we go to great lengths of learning new skills or developing new hobbies or finding these things that bring us joy, that we may strive after doing them as often as possible. Some people go to such great lengths as to find drugs or substances or things like that that make them give this euphoric feeling, and as long as they keep taking that, their happiness continues and the woes of the world go away. But here's the issue. We, although can find so many modes of happiness, are declared one of the most depressed generations of all time, which is really surprising, so take it as you wish. Because there was like huge epidemics that took out a third of Europe, then we have wars that ravaged hundreds of years, and yet now we're the most depressed? That might show something for how we react to it more than anything else. And in the midst of all this depression and anxiety and worry about becoming happy and finding fulfillment, tons of books have been written on this, claiming things such as, go through the things in your house. If they bring you joy, keep them. If they don't, get rid of them. Or self-help speakers or big presenters that claim to have the secret tool for how you become happy. In the midst of all this, we've always had the answer. Jesus gave it to us. The answer is not what we anticipate, which is why we tend not to listen. His answer came in today's gospel, the Beatitudes. He mentions it, blessed. The other way to translate blessed, the Greek word makarioi, is happiness, or happy, or it's a type of happiness that only comes from God. It's a very specific sense of happy. Happy are those who are poor. Happy are those who weep. Happy are those who have nothing. Wait a minute, that's not what we anticipate. So let's dive into what Jesus' words say and get a sense of what he means. How does he guide us to happiness? To do so, though, I'm going to start with the woes, the ones we don't want to pay attention to, the four woes that end it, starting with, woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Realistically, we're all very rich. And what does he mean by rich? He means having things. Things that occupy our time and energy. Things that so distract us that we have no space for anything else. Let me give you an example. How often have you seen this great mansion and thought to yourself, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to clean that. Now you see what I mean. It's the fact of our lives nowadays is that we have so many things we can do that we can easily fill up our entire lives with so much stuff that we are rich with it. We are consumed by it. We have to spend time and energy maintaining each of those things, developing each of those skills, making sure everything's in its proper place, to the point where we spend even more time and energy building it up and making it have more and more things in this endless cycle of things. And this isn't just money, not just physical things. It can also be as much as friends. It can be hobbies, skills. All these things fit into this realm of richness. We have our consolation. Through them, we are happy, right? Well, let's flip it around. Blessed is the one who is poor, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Now, I know a lot of poor people who have no monetary wealth to their own, and they're not very happy people. Why? Because they're constantly striving for an ideal they cannot reach, or an ideal that takes so much of their time and energy, they're just like the rich people. Their whole lives are focused on that ideal they cannot grasp. So what does Jesus mean by poverty? He means an openness, a freedom, that we're not so tied up with the things of the world and this chaotic mess that we created, but we have this freedom to allow something more into our lives. The goal of poverty is to give ourselves space for God. That's what makes them blessed. That's what makes them happy. They're not worried about all the things. They can come and go at their pleasure. They can give them away or take them in without any second thought to it. Because their main goal is that openness to the will of God. That openness to experiencing Him that guides them forward into life. This is the poverty He speaks of. Woe to you who are filled, for you will be hungry. This one follows very closely with the first one, because as much as we are filled, we take in so much stuff that we have no more space. We've eaten such a lavish meal, we're not ready for dessert. So that's one's easy to understand. The other part of it's not. Blessed are you who are hungry, for you will be satisfied. If you've ever experienced true hunger, it's quite a sensation. That gnawing feeling at the core of your stomach that seems to pain you. That sense of your gurgling stomach that never seems to go away. The gnawing sensation that drives away our energy. This is a sense of hunger. But he's not saying, go and feel the pangs of hunger. He's using hunger as a way for us to understand our desire for him. Do we desire God to the point where we feel the difference? It gnaws at us. It pains us. It gurgles in our stomachs. What kind of hunger would lead to that? For a lot of us, we're used to the discipline of going to Mass. It's a habit. Do we feel the difference if we miss a Sunday? Does it make any difference in our lives? Or prayer. If we're used to a habit of prayer and we miss a day, does it make any difference? Does it make a difference enough where we hunger after it? The next day's character has changed because we stopped praying. This is to hunger after God, to feel the hole that's left when he's not there, to recognize the difference when our lives have changed out of it. That's what he means by hunger. Woe to you who laugh, for you will grieve and weep. Wait a minute, what? We all like to laugh. Laughter is a good thing. Even God laughs in the Psalms. So why is laughter a problem? Well, it's not laughter that's the problem. The problem is striving after this kind of emotional high, as though I can stay up on that high forever and do whatever it takes to keep it going, which is a huge problem. Because if our whole goal is to stay on an emotional high, someday it has to crash. And that crash is devastating. The crash makes us wonder, what did I do? How did I get to this place? How do I get back up to that place where I feel good again? That place where everything's wonderful and I'm joyous. What does it take? And we take all of our energy and efforts to make ourselves feel that way once again. Let's flip it around. Blessed are you who weep, for you will laugh. This is a beautiful line that makes us realize that weeping actually has benefits. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to weep. It's okay to mourn, because that's part of being human. And the ebbs and flows of life gives us the character that makes us know what joy is like and makes us know what sadness is like. If we stayed an emotional high all our lives long, it would just be normal, and we wouldn't actually be joyful. We just kind of collapse to a normalcy. Instead, if we allow ourselves to ebb and flow, we know what the different emotions are like. And more importantly, if we know that weeping leads to joy, then we know we just wait out this time of sadness and eventually it'll end. We can't be sad forever. God will make sure there's always a point of joy in the midst of it. It gives us courage, gives us confidence. This time is just a time of mourning. It'll pass. I won't be here forever. It'll be okay. Now for the one we don't want to hear. Woe to you when people speak highly of you. Who doesn't like praise? Who doesn't like it when people say, oh, you're great, you're wonderful, you have such great talent at that. We love to be complimented. Why would it be a problem? Well, the problem is not so much in being complimented, but what we do with it. Does it make the character of who I am? Am I so bound by the comments and compliments of people that I base my life on their opinion of me? That's the challenge. If I so work towards what they want me to be, who am I? I cease to exist. I become their impression of what they want me to be. Which is why the other side is even more harsh. Blessed are you when they insult you, when they utter every kind of evil against you. Well, who wants that? Like, who wants to be insulted by people? Who wants to be harassed? And he's, by the way, not encouraging you to go and like poke at people so they harass you and then you feel better about yourself. That's not what he's going at either. It's that last tag that reshapes the entire blessedness on account of my name, which means all the mockery, all the scorn, all the derision that comes is not because I did something. It's because of who I am. I know who I am because God made me that way. I am confident in God who makes me what I am. I don't have to worry about the impressions of others. I am who I am, and I let God be who he is, and I go out in the world and they mock me or curse me because of that. Oh, well, that's because Christ lives in me. But that's not where it ends. Now we take this wonderful twist. Rejoice and be glad. I cannot emphasize the value of the word rejoice. It sits there in such a prominent way that it radically reshapes the entirety of the Beatitudes. This word rejoice occurs only 3 times in all the New Testament. 3 times. The first one is when the shepherds meet the baby Jesus. They rejoice at seeing the newborn king. Then, when John leaps in Elizabeth's womb, he is filled with joy. The 3rd time is right here in the Beatitudes. These 3 moments are drastic and important encounters with the true and living God. This is a sense of joy we get when we realize that God is the core of who we are. That we do these things not because we want to weep or we want to be hungry or we want to be poor, but because we want God. And that's the cause of our joy. This fleeting happiness leads to something so much more profound that it's worth striving after. This is the core of how we get to happiness. We realize God is the only one who can make us happy. He's the only one that can bring us that joy. So the poverty isn't poor, it's openness. The hunger isn't so painful, it's because we want him. The weeping isn't to last forever, because he will instill us with joy. And he makes us who we are. So if we follow his rules, his guide, this new law he gave us, it guides us to what it really means to be happy. That we don't have to worry about our own impressions of things. We don't have to go after fleeting pleasures. Instead, here it is. It's before us. Here is the secret to happiness.